Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Good evening and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research and Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Tonight's guest is Dr. Stafford Betty, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. And how are you this evening, Bob?
I am good. And as you mentioned, when Dr. Betty is here, if anybody would like to call in, he's a world expert in afterlife studies. And his book details questions that we all have about specifically what the afterlife is like. So people have various questions. What's the environment like? I mean, do you have a body? Do you have activities and that kind of
stuff? What I think is the most interesting thing is how he has compiled the information in the book. And you'll probably get into that with him, but that's what I found most fascinating, because there are literally hundreds of books out there from people who claim to have channeled this piece of information and that piece of information, and you put them all together and nothing makes sense.
Yeah.
And he's put them all together and it makes sense.
Yeah, he certainly has. You know, just about everybody that you talk to in the realm of spirituality, they talk about disassociating the ego mind, you know, from the from our true self, the ego mind being that part of us that, I guess, lets us navigate in the physical world. It's also where things like greed and hatred come from, and jealousy and things of that nature. And as you know, and I'll tell a listening audience, I mean, why we've been thinking about this a lot is that Fran and I have a friend, and we haven't talked to him in a while, but recently got in touch. And he was a man that was steeped in materialism, the way we think of materialism. I don't know that he gave much thought to life after death, but he was in the corporate world. He put a high value on competition, on money, on toys. He always had, you know, the best cars and the fancy houses and everything else, all the trappings of wealth. And suddenly, it came upon a time that a job he was pointing towards, his whole career, was offered to him, and that's becoming the CEO of a fairly large, you know, corporation. And not only did he not take the job, but he left the material world. And
suddenly.
Suddenly, very suddenly, which was a shock to everybody. Now, I mean, I'll preface this by saying I remember that, you know, an incident where we were on vacation, you know, with him, and I was reading a book on the beach, which happened to be the Tibetan Book of the Dead. I guess not too many people read that on vacation, but that was of great interest. And I remember him asking a few questions, and he sort of became a little bit interested in the work that we do. But to make a long story short, he is now dedicated his whole life. He's divested himself of everything. He sent us a photo of his worldly possessions, which consisted of two pairs of pants, two shirts, some sandals, and a laptop, a notepad, which is how he does keep in touch with the rest of the world, which got me to thinking you know, is it really possible for us? I mean, it's a great concept, you know, here, but could I give up, truly give up the ego mind, or can you? I mean, you have responsibilities. You come into contact with people every day. You have, you know, the stresses and the aggravation that comes along with it. You have, you know, a family. You have a need for money. You know, can you divest yourself of the ego mind as he did, or do you have to be in a different environment?
You have to remove yourself from the cultural woes that surround you. We live in the United States, where if you remove yourself from the material world, you're where do you live? How do you live where you do live? Or do you sleep in the street? And if you sleep in the street, because now you've removed yourself from all worldly possessions, then you're regarded as a bum or nothing. But here you have cultures of people that live without material things, and they live in peace, and they live without the rat race wrapped around their necks, saying, I have to get up in the morning, I have to get dressed, brush my teeth, and go to work so that I can make money so I could get up tomorrow and do that same thing again.
Yeah. Well, what's so striking in this particular case is that he, our friend, you know, studied with some masters or swamis, and, you know, in India and Vietnam, and he was imparted with all this great wisdom. He now believes that he is free for the first time in his life, because he has no obligations, and he sees himself as a vessel for love and compassion, and he believes that's now his life purpose, is just to meet people, get into dialogue, you know, help them, and just smile and be peaceful. And it's working. What concerns me, well, as a matter of fact, also, I was so struck by the complete turnaround, you know, in his life, that I sent him a whole bunch of interview questions, which he answered, and we're going to publish that in the next newsletter. But in a recent communication with him, he is going to return to the United States, and he's going to do the same thing that he was doing, you know, in Asia, which is pretty much what you described, you know, wandering from place to place. He figures he'll go to nursing homes and hospice, and he knows there's no death, and he'll talk about that. And I don't know, like you say, how do you, you know, where do you sleep and where do you eat?
They're wonderful questions. But the thing that we have to understand is that, unlike somebody who just says, okay, I'm just going to exist and sleep in the street and eat from a garbage can, this is a person who has been given knowledge from a higher level, from an unseen world, that puts him in service to people. And so when you use the word wander, he's not really wandering in the sense that we use the word wander.
Right.
He's walking around seeking opportunities to help others. And so that's what he understands was told to him as his job, his purpose here, and he's going to fulfill that.
Yeah, and I pay attention in all his writings, because I think, you know, we all can have a lot to learn from it. I know that he also described a couple of experiences that he had while in Asia, where he was close to death. By the power of his mind, you know, just willed himself to instantly, you know, recover. He also described in one of his treks of slipping and falling, apparently he was going to go off a cliff, and he reached out and saved himself with what he describes as just a lump of grass that he was holding on to, which would mean that there was some sort of other intervention, you know, that was helping.
Right. And we understand that in the work that we do, and the research that comes through, and the stories that come through, is that when those kind of quote-unquote miracles happen, It's because someone literally is watching over you because you have not yet fulfilled your reason for being here or your mission for being
right.
here.
Well, that his quest will certainly continue, and anybody interested will keep you apprised. So we're going to go to our break, and when we come back, we are going to be speaking with the Dr. Stafford Betty. So stay with us. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Don't miss Forever Family Foundation's 7th Annual Conference Weekend, November 9th and 10th, this year in warm and sunny San Diego, California. In Search of the Afterlife, Experiencing, Communicating, Connecting to Another World, is designed for general audiences interested in learning about evidence of an afterlife. Attendees will be treated to cutting-edge presentations of evidence that we survive our physical deaths, as well as demonstrations of spirit communication by certified mediums. Add on the optional Friday night fundraiser dinner featuring medium Kim Russo, host of The Haunting of TV show, and stay an extra day for Media Monday. For more information, visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.winbridge.org.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's Hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Stafford Betty. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they could be found at www.windbridge.org. Bob?
And Dr. Stafford Betty, we welcome him back to the show. We love when he joins us. He received his Ph.D. in theology from Fordham University. That was a number of years ago. He's currently a professor at the California State University in Bakersfield, where he teaches religious studies and a professor of arts and humanities. His work in the philosophy of religion eventually broadened into paranormal research as he contemplated life's big questions about meaning and purpose, and something that's not often addressed in the world of academia. He wrote a wonderful book called The Afterlife Unveiled, What the Dead Tell Us About Their World, and it contains the most significant and descriptive examples of channeled information from the afterlife. Dr. Betty, welcome to the show. What's the best way for people to find you? Is that just to Google you, or do you want to give out an email address?
I'd be happy to answer email. That's how I usually do it. It's S. Betty. Couldn't be easier. S. Betty at CSUB. That's California State University, Bakersfield. edu. So S. Betty at CSUB.edu.
Right, and I think they also, if you Google, you'll find more about the book in your page at the university.
Yep.
Now, there are some that have read your book and are familiar with it. As with all books, there's quite a number of people that haven't had the opportunity yet. We mentioned that it's a collection of accounts that were taken from channel literature, meaning that they're spirit accounts. So I guess
that's right.
A good place to start again was let's tell people what a channeled account is.
A channeled account is an account that comes from the other world, comes from the world of spirit. It reaches us through mediums. Usually that's the case. There are exceptions, but in the cases that I work with, and they're the great majority, we need the help of, in other words, the spirits need the help of mediums, gifted individuals, to get their message across to the public, back to Earth, in other words.
Mm. I mean, do you think that people in spirit sometimes come through to people that don't act per se as mediums, or just...
I have no doubt about that, Bob, and I'm sure you have come across that many times.
Yeah.
Yes, but what is good about certain mediumistic literature is that some of the most interesting spirits, certainly the most interesting spirits I've ever dealt with, are those who are willing to tell us at book length, in other words, to tell us in tens of thousands of words about their world. And that, to me, is the most interesting literature on the planet. And so that's what my book, The Afterlife Unveiled, is all about. It summarizes that literature and gives us a sense of what the next world, in all likelihood, is really like. In other words, the very venue that we're about to enter when we die is described by these spirits, and I think that's a really important thing to come across as one confronts one's own death.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, the book can serve as a roadmap for those that are trying to navigate our own physical lives, because the not only will tell us what's ahead, but perhaps what we should be doing while we're here. No.
Absolutely. In other words, that's part of what the spirits want to tell us. First of all, they want to assure us that death is not the end. They also want it to be extremely clear that we are accountable for the things that we do in Earth life, that what we do here will have a great deal to do. We'll have everything to do, as a matter of fact, with our experience on the other side. And that's an important, that's an incredibly important thing to know about, in my opinion.
Mm. And, you know, when we talk about, you mentioned sometimes these answers could be book length, and a lot of our listeners are familiar with quite a different form of mediumship and with very short and evidential messages that are communicated.
Yeah.
But these were communicated through, trance mediums, correct, where the spirit would really take over their body?
Not in all cases. Often that's the case. But in other words, the kinds of mediums that do this kind of work are just as varied as the kind of mediums that do the work that you more often deal with.
Right.
That is to say, some mediums, some spirits use the voice box of the medium. So they're not necessarily in trance. They can be aware, actually, of what is being said through their voice box. They are very aware that they're not the ones who are presenting the evidence, who are presenting what is being said, but they are aware of what's coming through them at the same time that it's being said.
Right. Yeah, I guess, you know, also some people, I've heard it described even among trance mediums as such a thing as a light trance, you know, where...
That's right.
As you describe, where the medium is fully aware, and a deep trance, you know, where they're not. I would imagine among your colleagues, you know, people say to you, you know, Stafford, well, why do you take these accounts so seriously? I mean, you know, what makes you so sure that you can depend upon it? So how do you answer something like that?
Yeah, first of all, most of my friends don't even want to get into this. They have no interest in it. They just, you know, think I'm an affable, friendly guy, and they think I'm a very strange, I have very strange interests. So they don't ask me. But, however, the answer that I would give to them if they did, and certainly these are the things that I anticipate being asked me of by people who read my book, first of all, let's put it this way. There is a great deal of empirical evidence that that the spirits are sharing with us. In other words, they are able to tell us things about their personal lives back on Earth that the medium knew nothing about. And these can arrange from very personal, intimate disclosures to book tests. And that's one of the things. In other words, it's called evidential, and that's an important part of the evidence that has impressed me, at any rate. But there are other things, too. The handwriting of the medium changes. It's not our own. Geraldine Cummins, the great Irish medium, had 50 different personalities come through her, and each of those personalities had its own handwriting and literary style. And that suggests to me that, you know, that it's not coming from the subconscious mind of Geraldine Cummins. It's coming from some of the source. Mm. So we have evidential, we have those kinds of things. But in the last analysis, there is no final conclusive evidence that the medium is not producing all of this quite unintentionally from her own subconscious mind. That is the worry that all of us have in this business. I think that the possibility, the probability of that is extremely low, but I also know that it's impossible to disprove that thesis.
Yeah,
one of the things also is that first-rate mediums marvel oftentimes at what comes through them. They know that they could not have thought those thoughts because sometimes the thoughts that are expressed are antithetical to what their own beliefs are. Or at least are much more profound than anything that they've ever thought about. So those are some of the other reasons that that I take it quite seriously.
Yeah, and I fully understand. Lots of times I've read many accounts of mediums who had little or no education, and they start
yep.
channeling information maybe with profound scientific principles
exactly.
or certainly vocabularies that they weren't aware of. What about the,
yeah.
the people say to us, and I'm sure you've heard it a million times too, that stop concerning yourself with the afterlife. You know, life is for the present. You know, just
right.
our job is just live it the best way we can. Don't be concerned
yeah.
with it. And maybe some even say, well, we're not supposed to know. It's just it's as if we're doing something wrong, you know. So
right.
you hear that?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I do hear that, and I do address that. First of all, the spirits themselves tell us that what they want to tell us and what they do tell us is extremely important for us to know, that it is not the case that they're violating some kind of cosmic law by giving us information that we really don't deserve. We have too little information about what the meaning of life is, and we desperately need more. And that's the view of the spirits who address this question that you just asked. We need more. The meaning of life seems to me to be something that is going to emerge as nowhere else with so much authority as from the other world, because they are closer to the source, as I think of them. They are closer to the source than any of our philosophers, than any of our theologians, even than our mystics, our great mystics. These are beings who are on a different plane of existence, closer to the Almighty or the all-knowing or whatever you want to call God, and they see things more clearly than we do, and we need to see them as clearly as they do, it seems to me. As far as being otherworldly, and I have been accused of being otherworldly, I don't think by people who really know me, because I don't seem very otherworldly when I play golf and get angry and so forth.
Right.
But that is a hard rap that I have been dealt, I think, undeservedly. And all I can say is that I don't know anybody who fears death so little as I do. And I think it's just a wonderful, just a great freedom not to have to worry or fear death. I'm very confident that we go on, and it's given me a kind of cheerfulness in my disposition that would not be there if I didn't have this profound confidence that death is not the end.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think that that's one of the profound perks that come along with it being involved in these things, is that you
actually, it really is.
You learn
it's a
more
great perk.
Other realms of existence, you lose that fear. And not, I know that I fear death. I don't fear death anymore, and I used to, you know, so that...
I did too,
and,
but
you
not
know,
anymore.
And when you read, I remember reading in, F.W. Meyer's work, I mean, I think he said something to the effect that, you know, maybe that's our main purpose in this physical life is to, you know, expand our minds to really recognize the true concept of reality and that there are other realms of existence. So, you know, maybe it's not, instead of not being some taboo, of not looking into it, it's quite the opposite. It's our main purpose. And it seems to be telling us.
I absolutely agree with that, Bob. The source or the all-knowing or whatever we want to call God is not going to make things easy for us in this life. The whole purpose is basically to grow our souls, and we do it by confronting serious challenges at every level, not only physical challenges but intellectual challenges. So we're not going to be told what the meaning of life is. This is something that we have to grow into, and I think that our culture, indeed, the worldview of the great majority of us needs to look more carefully, needs to be more dependent on what that kind of research tells us. And so I quite agree that I would imagine that God would be delighted to see us bring to light more of what his plan is, though he's not going to tell us, he, she is not going to tell us what it is, because we need to work that out. So that's my own view.
Yeah, and you know what I like about your work is that, I mean, you're a professor at university, and you're teaching, you know, young minds, and I wonder, you know, it seems that we live in a generation that's all about the here and now, you know, where everything's instant gratification. So, I mean, what's their reaction when you start speaking about concepts such as life after death?
Right. I use my own book in my Meaning of Death course. It's the finale. It's the final book in the course. I use 6 paperbacks, and my book, The Afterlife Unveiled, is, you might say, the crown jewel of the course. And most of my students are truly fascinated by what they find, and they're astonished. They have no clue that anything like this could ever exist. The ones who are most troubled are the fundies. And they don't know what to make of this literature, because they, for one thing, there is an openness to reincarnation. This is something that their religion forbids them to take seriously, and there are a few other factors that trouble them. But for the most part, it affirms what Christianity affirms in the abstract, but it just does it much more specifically, more concretely, more vividly. And so it's attractive to people with open minds. It's enormously attractive to people with open minds, I have found. Mm-hmm. The other group that is troubled by it would be the very hardcore, immovable, maybe 3 out of 40 people fall into this category, scientific sorts who are wed to materialism. Materialism has become their religion, and nothing is going to shake them from that. But for the most part, you know, this is a very popular course. My course's reputation has, you know, it's been talked about. It's always heavily enrolled.
Mm. So, I mean, students, the way you describe it, they're no different than the rest of society, really. You have different segments and you have different prejudices.
Yeah.
But if you have an open mind, you have an open mind. So
yeah, that's true. And I find that women generally do better with this than men. They tend to be a little bit more malleable in general, plenty of exceptions. They tend to be much less inclined to be hardcore materialists. They tend to listen to their intuitions and to pay attention to their intuitions a little bit better than the typical males. Sometimes males feel that in order to be a rugged individualist, you've got to be a materialist. You can't be into this easy stuff that goes with religion. But anyway, for the most part, my students are very receptive and open to it, and I must say that my dean is not very happy about this course, and he's always trying to edge me out of being the teacher of it, but I've so far prevailed. He's a materialist.
Well, if you need any petition signed, just let us know.
I know. I may at some point. I've somehow survived up till this point, but it has not been easy.
Yeah. Well, you know, you certainly have many of the answers that a lot of people want to know, and that is, you know, what is the afterlife like? So, we could talk for hours about it, but
yeah.
Can you give us a little taste from the consensus of the reports? Can you give me a description of where we're all headed?
Okay. Well, the latest redo of the last chapter of my book, the conclusion, in that chapter 44 statements or claims are made about the afterlife. In other words, there are 44 elements in the summary, and I've upped it now to 50 altogether, and I call this the Nifty 50. But the first one is the same, and I'll go ahead and just read it out, and it'll give you a good introduction to at least the geography of the world to come.
Okay.
And it goes like this: our present ideas about heaven and hell are illusory. Hell is hellish, yes, but it's not a place of physical pain, nor is it everlasting, nor is it a place where there is not help. And heaven is not one place, but a spectrum of worlds stretching from the lowly joys of souls newly arrived to spheres of unimaginable bliss and perfection for souls much more advanced. The afterworld is not some fantastic vision of infinity, where souls are locked in poses of permanent rapture, gazing at the face of God. And no one floats on a cloud while playing a harp. Rather, it's a place with landscapes and seas and houses and cities reminiscent of our own world. It's an objectively real material world, but made of matter vibrating much more rapidly than our senses can pick up. There are gardens, universities, libraries, and hospices for the newly dead, but no factories, fire stations, sanitary landfills, or smokestacks. There are no dirty jobs to do. Quote, we have no traffic, and our roads are covered with the thickest and greenest grass, as soft to the feet as a bed of fresh moss. It's on these that we walk, says the spirit of Monsignor Hugh Benson, communicating through the English medium Anthony Borgia. He's describing a relatively low zone of the afterworld, sometimes called paradise or summerland. It resembles a glorified earth. So that's just the beginning. That's the first of the 50 summaries that are in my book. So that gives you some notion. Were you more interested in something particular, Bob?
Well, no, it's the most common question that we get asked, you know. I mean, okay, well, you know, you give us evidence that the afterlife exists and you give us evidence of communication, but everybody wants to know, you know, what is it like? Is it a place? Do we have bodies? Do we have homes? Do we learn? And you've addressed, you know, a bunch of those things. I mean, so
actually, all those questions are addressed. Yeah.
Right there.
What I might do is read a description of the Shadowlands, because that description is of the what is usually called the lower astral zone, the zone that good people basically pass into at death. And bad people, though, and there are plenty of them, have a very different kind of experience awaiting them, according to this literature. Often it's called the Shadowlands. And I'm just going to read a shorter description of the Shadowlands to, more complete the picture.
Okay.
There are hellish regions in the astral, and large populations that make their home there. The Shadowlands is a vast world of many conditions. The landscapes vary from sordid city neighborhoods to parched gray scrubland to dark, lifeless deserts. The vivid clarity of higher realms is missing. Instead, there is a dull overcast. Temporarily lost or confused or stubbornly unrepentant souls populate these regions. Disturbing noises are sometimes mentioned. Francis Banks, communicating in 1965 through the English medium Helen Greaves, gives us a horrifying picture of a Nazi leader who committed suicide when Germany fell. The man, now remorseful and eager to pull himself out of his personal hell, quote, was a terrible and pathetic sight, with sores and scars and sightless eyes, all of which he imposed on his astral body by the power of his subconscious mind. Prayed for and nursed by compassionate spirit nuns, he finally found the strength to begin the very slow process of recovery. So that's the darker side of the afterworld. I don't think that kind of experience awaits either you or me or probably any of the listeners here, but I know plenty of people who might qualify for such a place.
Yeah, and we're going to have to talk a little bit more about that after the break. We are talking with Dr. Stafford Betty. His book that we've been talking about is called The Afterlife Unveiled, What the Dead Tell Us About Their World. We're going to talk more about what the afterlife is like when we come back. Stay with us. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Don't miss Forever Family Foundation's 7th Annual Conference Weekend, November 9th and 10th, this year in warm and sunny San Diego, California. In Search of the Afterlife, Experiencing, Communicating, Connecting to Another World, is designed for general audiences interested in learning about evidence of an afterlife. Attendees will be treated to cutting-edge presentations of evidence that we survive our physical deaths, as well as demonstrations of spirit communication by certified mediums. Add on the optional Friday night fundraiser dinner featuring medium Kim Russo, host of The Haunting of TV show, and stay an extra day for Media Monday. For more information, visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Victor and Wendy Zammit, researchers of the afterlife for over 30 years, have released their new book, A Lawyer Presents the Evidence for the Afterlife, What Really Happens When We Die. It has received rave reviews and is a comprehensive look at all of the evidence, including physical mediumship, near-death experiences, deathbed visions, after-death contacts, reincarnation, and a host of other phenomena that will prove that we are much more than our physical bodies. To learn more, or to sign up for their free newsletter, visit www.victorzammit.com. That's www.victorzammit.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Stafford Betty. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found at www.winbridge.org. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. First, we want to let you know there are three ways to show us that you like Signs of Life Radio. First, go to the Signs of Life Radio page on Facebook and like us. Two, use the donate button on any of our weekly email show reminders to support programming. There's also a space to add a comment on what you love and what you don't like so much about the show. And three, remember us when you shop. Yes, when you shop, you can support the work of our 100% volunteer not-for-profit organization without spending any additional money at all. First, you will need a credit card to shop online. So if you don't already have one or are in need of another, go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that's taken out, and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Second, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first, use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find what you are looking for in their more than 1,300 online stores like Adobe, Apple, Fandango, Marriott, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please, take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our seventh annual Afterlife Conference will be held this year in beautiful and warm San Diego, California, at the DoubleTree by Hilton Golf Resort, November 9th and 10th. Mark the dates, as this will be the best one ever. Make your plans now for the Friday night banquet featuring Kim Russo, star of the hit TV series The Haunting of, as our keynote presenter bringing through communication from the other side. Then the conference begins early Saturday morning through Sunday evening, including featured presentations by Tom and Lisa Butler, Dr. Jeffrey Tarrant, Dr. Stephen Browdy, Dr. Evan Alexander, and Lloyd Auerbach with spirit communication demonstrations from certified mediums Laura Lynn Jackson and Angelina Diana. And as a special add-on this year, we bring you Medium Monday. So check the website for registration information now. Our Holidays Past raffle is in full swing, and you might want to get in while the number assignments are low, since a computer program pulls the winners by assigned numbers. The mediums in this raffle are Dave Campbell, Eliza Ray, Nancy Marlowe, Tracy Lee Nash, and Catherine Nadal. It is $5 a chance. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Dr. Stafford Betty. When we left off, Dr. Betty was reading some of the significant channeled material describing the afterlife. And you just mentioned a situation, I think, that I'd like to talk more about, where you have somebody that was a horrible person in the physical. And a lot of people, they ask things like, is there afterlife justice? And what happens to these people? And so the consensus, Dr. Betty, is that when we talk about these shadow environments, I mean, we they're a result of our own doing, right? We use self-judgment, yep. Right?
Yep, you are the judge. There is no God sitting on some sort of a throne, going through some sort of juridical process that is going to find you guilty and therefore worthy of one of these dark places. All of it is internal. All of it is quite psychologically understandable. You just are confronted with yourself as never before back on Earth. All of the shackles of your self-understanding just fall away, and you see yourself for exactly what you are. And if you see yourself as basically an evil person or a seriously addicted person or just a negative person, you're not going to want to spend any time in the light. You're going to want to spend time where you are most comfortable, and that will be in darkness. So it's a kind of a self-judgment process, and it's a perfected process because you yourself are the best judge. You are confronted with yourself as never before, and that can be a very freeing and lovely and wonderful experience, or a terrible experience, or something in between, which is probably for most of us the case.
Mm. Do the spirit people in spirit, do they address what we hear so much when people try to figure out, you know, if we do live in a loving universe, or if there is a divine presence, you know, why is so much suffering in the physical world?
Oh,
you know?
That's wonderful. Yeah, they do. It's one of my that's one of my pet interests. I've written a great deal about that subject in my more philosophical earlier days. The so-called problem of evil. Why does God allow so much suffering? The suffering of the innocent. On our planet, physically, presumably on all physical planets, and the spirits do address that. And the most amazing thing that that a spirit, a particular spirit, told me, I'd never thought about this in my entire life, is that first of all of us need to be challenged in order to grow. We don't get strong and better because we're just cruising through life with never a challenge, with never any suffering. But it's not just we who need to grow. It is the spirits on the other side themselves who need to grow. The other side is not a place where you just kick back and lazily sort of just wander through life. Not at all. It's a place where you are expected to grow at your level, whatever your level may be, just as we're expected to grow at our level. And one of the responsibilities of the more advanced spirits on the other side is to take care of worlds like our Earth. And God's not going to remove all those evils because it's up to the spirits, those more advanced spirits, to do what they can to remove those unnecessary sufferings. And they do it in a number of ways. My new book is all about this, as a matter of fact. It's called The Religion of Heaven. And spirits do practice religion on the other side. They practice it far more perfectly than we do, and they get more out of it. As a matter of fact, we need to learn from the way they practice their religion and the way they look at the world and adopt their views, it seems to me, and change our religions to be more like theirs. So, yeah, I think that that's the key, is that the source is not going to make things easy for us. There are challenges at every level for every one of us, even the most advanced spirits, even the lowest humans.
So it's fair to say then the religion of heaven is free of ritual and dogma, more towards the pure essence of compassion,
yeah,
and love?
It is completely free of dogma. There are no rigid creeds or magical beliefs that souls have to accept. You know, right here, we think it matters whether or not you're a Baptist or a Catholic or a Hindu or a Buddhist or a Muslim or an Anglican and so forth. All that's just rubbish from their point of view. There's no truth in that whatsoever. The only thing that matters is your character, your native, not your native character, but your inner character. And whatever produces that is good. You know, it's good that you came across it. But there are no guarantees. There are no rigid creeds or magical beliefs. So, on the other hand, there are many wonderful, incredibly beautiful rituals described in this literature. And these rituals involve gatherings of huge numbers of spirits who come together to celebrate something. What they celebrate might be the graduation from a lower sphere to a higher sphere by hundreds or even thousands of more advanced spirits. Or it might be the coming down from a higher sphere, a kind of an epiphany, a presentation, if you will, of a higher sphere to beings on a lower sphere. And there are great celebrations of music and light that accompany these epiphanies. So there are many of these rituals that are described in the literature, but they're all delightful. They are all delighted in by the spirits who participate in them. So they're a little bit unlike our church going on Sunday morning, if you will.
Right, a little bit. So
yeah,
you mentioned,
quite a bit.
Yeah, you mentioned that a lot of people in spirit take it upon themselves as sort of a job, you know, to help those in the physical world,
yeah,
or to help maybe advance us. Does it sometimes work the other way? Can people in the physical help spiritual growth on the other side by focusing thoughts or prayer towards people that reside in that realm?
Absolutely. Spirits tell us that our loving thoughts for them, often reaching them in the form of a prayer, are efficacious and deeply appreciated.
Hmm.
So prayer is a great source of comfort for the spirit you're praying for. Now, it's often the case that a Christian or a Jew or a Muslim or a Hindu might pray to God for some spirit. The impression that I get from this literature is not that God is actually going to hear this prayer and grant it. The prayer is picked up by lower beings, and particularly by guardian spirits or by the individual that you're praying for directly. So your prayer goes directly to him, spirit to spirit, and gives the spirit comfort. On the other hand, spirits don't forget their loved ones back on earth, whom they often seek to help by projecting healing thoughts or by personal visits. So it goes both ways. I mean, there's quite a window between the two worlds. We can help them, and they help us.
Makes sense, right? I mean, it's really one connected universe, so it makes perfect sense. So we're going to be looking forward to the new book. Where do you stand with that? You said 60%. What do you time frame? You think that might be done by the end of the year?
Yeah.
Or,
Easily by Christmas, and hopefully by the middle of October, because it's moving along nicely. It just depends on how encumbered I am by all of the school starting up in about 3 weeks. But I hope to get it done, most of it done, by the time school does start, and I think there's a good chance I'll get it done by the middle of October, the whole thing.
Well, your dean of the faculty there will be happy that you have another book to add to the curriculum, I'm sure. Right?
Won't he, though? I'm sure he'll put it up in his little collection, his little window outside his office.
Yeah.
No, he and I don't get along so well. I try very hard to keep on his good side, but he doesn't really believe in what I'm doing. I think it's something of an embarrassment to me, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, the heck with them. You know, we love you.
Yeah, that's all you can say. You know, it's regrettable, but at least I'm here and I'm allowed to teach and still going strong. So what a blessing, eh?
Yes, absolutely. And we have been talking with Dr. Stafford Betty. The book we've been talking about is The Afterlife Unveiled, What They Did Tell Us About Their World. It really is a roadmap. I encourage you to pick it up if you don't already own it. There is a link on our Forever Family Foundation website to Amazon, where you can pick that up. And we promise to invite Dr. Betty back when the new book comes out so we can talk about that as well. Stafford, thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to talking with you again soon. And best of luck, and keep us posted on the new book.
Bob, as always, it's always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer May the universe create a channel of healing energy from all participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Francis Mastracco, Tim Donahue, Deb Martin, Tina Jocelyn, Barbara Russell, Vicki Steffi, Wendy Leppo, Mark Barron, Eileen Lafata, Rita Springer, David Hayes, Barbara Petillo, Glenna Irwin, Julie B., Stanley Mullen, John Borland, Flora Prisco, Miriam Pierzka, Tanya Cash, Andy O'Brien, Jeanette Davies, Janice Borelli, Joel Auerbach, Lenny Ficarelli, Rachel S., Lynn Cheney, Kimberly Saavedra, Johnny Jackson, and Henry Stark. And now let us, as one, consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this. To love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time for us to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.